The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
Death. Death comes for us all eventually. But what would you do if you knew? Would you run, hide, or accept your fate? And Tentacle World Order. It has a nice ring to it, but what exactly is it? Surely it can't have anything to do with Ikkyatsu. Well, there's only one way to find out. Before that, I need to remind you that once again, this podcast may contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment, and of course, naughty, salty language. It may not be suitable for children under 13. Now, grab your tentacles, dim the lights, find a blanket to hide under. For today death is coming. And it's coming as Chapter 2, Tentacle World Order.
Mark swished the mop back and forth as a large octopus descended in the tank in front of him. He paused and smiled at its magnificence, how it propelled itself in the deep with ease, in an environment where man needed special suits to even survive. A highly intelligent creature, superior to man in so many ways. In the distance, someone whistled, reminding Mark it was time to mop up and go home. He put the mop back in its bucket and pushed it towards his supervisor. "Good job, Mark," the thin man in glasses said with a smile. "Thank you," he replied coldly. "I see you like Otto."
"Otto?"
"Our octopus," the man said.
"Oh, yes," he replied. "He's an exceptional creature, but..."
"But?"
"He's not your octopus," Mark commented in defiance.
"Oh," the man said, trying to determine Mark's statement and intentions. He decided to take them lightly. Mark was a rare, hard worker. He wanted to keep him employed here. Laughing, "I suppose you're right, Mark. Otto is Otto's. I just wish we could return to the ocean where he belongs."
"Really?"
Mark had an unexpected, overly excited reaction, and Dr. Meadows felt uneasy.
"Yes, Mark," he replied. "Anyway, Mark, I believe your ride should be waiting out front."
"Thank you."
He watched as Mark emptied the bucket into the slop sink and then hang up his equipment. They hear a horn and Dr. Meadows sees a white fan with a purple and green tentacle curling around a globe painted on its side, pull up on the lower level. He notes the name of the company under it. It reads, Tentacle World Order. Dr. Meadows watches as several young men are moving around and storing equipment, preparing a place for Mark.
"Good night, Doctor,"
he hears Mark call from behind as he heads towards the escalator.
"Mark?"
"Yes, Doctor."
"Tentacle World Order. That's a rather strange name for a cleaning company, isn't it?"
"Oh, no, sir. It's rather informative and purposeful."
He gives the doctor a creepy smile. Dr. Meadows shivers. He wonders if he maybe should rethink his decision on Mark.
"I see. Good night, Doctor."
"Good night, Mark."
The van pulls away from the aquarium and drives out of the city of Rift and onto a major highway. The road, unfortunately in ill repair, jostles the inside of the van as it makes its hour trip to the small town of Maple Ridge. They exit the highway and get onto a more local county road, Route 7. Mark scowls as he sees a steeple rising up from the center of the town.
"Wouldn't it be nice to see that crumble and fall?"
Finally, they pull in front of a small home on Jackson Street and pause in front of the garage as he waits for it to open. His companions slide the side door of the van open, allowing them to exit. They then turn and kneel before rising and grabbing a box. They march it into the garage ahead of the van. Then they place the box onto an unrefined table where it seems to be desperately out of place, for this is no ordinary box. I mean, the dimensions were plain enough, 1 foot by 1 foot by 1 foot. It was literally a cube. But how it was fashioned is what stood out. Its front had a gold ornate door with a small keyhole. The hinges, or I should say hinge, that lined the side was a long, tentacle-shaped hinge. In it were seven eyes with dark stones that had been engraved into the gold doors. And written in a strange, ancient tongue was Ba-La-Ikyatsu. Each side of the box depicting tentacles reaching out towards the void, towards a blue-colored world. The men moved around the garage until finally one of them approaches the box and inserts the key. It slowly opens, revealing a disembodied head. The head of Henry Thomas. "You couldn't have been any more clumsy handling me, could you, Mark?" Mark pulls his hood down and approaches and kneels. "Sorry, my lord. It was unintentional, I assure you." "I'm sure," the head said with a heavy sense of sarcasm. Henry was far from happy. He hadn't had a body in 3 years, and he was growing anxious for one. "Remind me," Henry quips, "why is it I just don't take yours?" "Because I am unknown, my lord, while you may still be recognized," Mark replied. Henry lets out a sigh and then demands, "Hold me up. Let me see our new recruits." Mark picks up the box, and with the door facing outward, he slowly spins around, showing off the faces of the three humans that they had managed to obtain. They were young, male teenagers, one with red hair, pasty skin, and zits. Another with a shaved head, dark eyes, and an earring. The last, a chubby fellow wearing a yellow dirty t-shirt with a large white smile, two black eyes, forming a sadistic smile. "And how far are we from our target?" Henry asked.
"We're a half a block away, my lord."
"Then everything has been arranged?"
"Yes."
Mark resealed the door and lifted the box. The teenage boys knelt as he carried it past them and into the ranch-style home. Weeks passed as they established themselves, obtaining more contracts, cleaning homes and businesses. Finally, fully at ease, they decide to make their move. Mark turns towards the heavyset teen.
"Come here, Brant," he calls him over, and hands him a tentacle-shaped knife. "Are you willing?"
Brant's eyes light up.
"Sweet!"
Joan Hollander sits alone at her kitchen table. Sipping a cup of coffee, she puts on the radio just to have some background noise. The last few years have been hard since Thomas had passed away. Empty rooms and empty hours. It was hard on her heart. She could swear she could actually feel her soul ache.
"Although the fire was put out, we still don't have any clue to the cause. Arson is suspected."
"A strange fire,"
Joan wondered. It made her think of Jonah.
"I wonder how he's doing."
It had been a couple years since he had stopped in. Maggie had been by a few months ago and had given her an update.
"And local news,"
the radio announcer continued,
"the mayor cut the ribbon for the new construction project to replace the Maple Ridge Mall." "I can't tell you how excited I am,"
he began.
"By late next year, we should have a new sports complex and convention center."
Bored, she decides to flip the station. Some jazz music fills the room, and she pauses, remembering a recurring dream. In it, she was sitting, listening to jazz music when the doorbell rings. With a heavy heart, she rises.
"It's time," she says to herself.
There had been no point running or trying to gain Maggie's or Jonah's aid. This was meant to happen, and she was tired. She was lonely. She wanted this to happen. She places a second coffee cup on the table and walks over to the entrance. She could almost feel the presence of the past events that had unfolded here. The day they lost Reagan and almost lost Jonah. The day Jonah left to go to the Cafe Solfeggio. And the day Maggie came to stay for a year. And the day Tom passed. Tears rolled down her face as she neared the door. Standing in its frame was a chubby fellow, Brant, wearing a yellow t-shirt with a large white smile and two black eyes, forming a sadistic face.
"Hello, Mrs. Hollander."
She could see the long, tentacle-shaped knife in his hand. A look of disappointment crosses his face as she turns away from him and nonchalantly walks towards the kitchen.
Please, come in. Would you like some coffee?
Really? Really? Don't you realize what I am? What's happening?
She gives him a slight smile and looks back over her shoulder.
Of course I do. I am his mother, after all. So, I don't recognize you. Who are you?
Kindness. Was this woman actually trying to show him kindness? Aggravated, the heavy-set man screams at her. My name doesn't matter, damn bitch! With an evil smile, he adds, I'm going to enjoy this! The coffee mug crashes to the floor as the knife plunges into her back. Joan falls to her knees as pain explodes, knocking the breath right out of her.
Ah, Bala, Igetsu Koda! He cries, and raises the blade again and again until she no longer feels pain, just the warmth of her own blood spreading across her back.
In front of her, as things fade, she suddenly sees a small figure step out of the darkness, with a bright smile across her freckled face.
Reagan? Hello, Mom.
The shape of Thomas forms behind Reagan, and then, with a snap, she finds herself standing in a field of grass. Warm sun caresses her face.
Is this?
Tom extends his arms out and pulls her in for a hug.
Welcome home.
The man stands over the body, blood dripping off the blade. She had not screamed or begged for her life. This is not how he envisioned this kill. Not at all. Then, a presence, not hers, filled the room. It seemed to pour out of every crevice of the house and swirl around the body.
Leave!
Two angry eyes pierced towards him.
Oh, what is this?
He grins in defiance.
Do you really want to find out?
The presence was growing stronger, becoming more like a wall of electricity as it now towers over the fallen body of Joan Hollander. Brandt feels himself being pushed back.
You people are no fun,
he glibly states, turning back towards the entrance. Oh, by the way, if you haven't figured it out, we're coming for you.
All of you.
The creature of light picks up the body and carries it into the bedroom, laying it gently on the bed, closing Joan's eyes and crossing her arms. Here the being would stay, guarding Joan's body. It motions towards the bedroom window, and it opens, allowing a sparrow to fly in. It lands gently on the being's finger, and it whispers to the bird. The sparrow acknowledges with peeps and head bobs before finally taking flight. It would cross space and time until it reached its intended target, carrying news, bad news. Joan Hollander was dead.
Oh my! Oh my indeed! What a bloody mess! Spilling coffee like that? Joan Hollander, you should be ashamed of yourself! Coffee is a precious, precious gift. That being said, Joan has left us, and now a sparrow flies across space and time to deliver Chapter 3. Bad news.